Here we go.
So let's talk about the movie we just got done watching.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
It surprised me.
Great movie.
This just feels like a movie that is being made to exploit the masses.
Oh yeah, I'd like to see that. It's not a bad film.
It's just bad.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And that movie sucked.
Yeah, well, hello. Hello there. Welcome to That Movie Podcast.
Film Talk Q&A.
It is July 1st, 2012.
Although you folks probably won't be hearing this till, what, the 3rd? Is that Wednesday?
Yes, the 4th, right? Yeah, 4th is Wednesday.
Okay.
Happy birthday, America. Anyway, so, let's get things rolling.
Here we are.
First up, now playing.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Ted. It just opened 2 days ago. It's a new film with Mark Wahlberg and directed by Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah. Written by Seth MacFarlane, produced by Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, and he's mainly known for The Family Guy, which is, in the interest of full disclosure, a TV show I've never seen a complete episode of.
Wow.
But I gotta say, I thoroughly enjoyed Ted.
So did I.
I thought it was really good. I wasn't expecting much.
Yeah.
Although I read, you know, I didn't actually read the reviews, but I saw like a couple like 7 out of 10s, 8 out of 10s. So I had high hopes, you know, but also I'm not a real big fan of The Family Guy. At least the little bits I've seen, it's easy for me to turn off. So,
you know, so... I like Family Guy, although I gotta admit this past season really didn't charge my boat. But, you know, I was afraid that with the concept of the movie, that all the funny parts were going to be in the previews, and I'm just going to be sitting there through, you know, 2 hours of, oh, crap, are we there yet? You know, it's like, is this movie over yet? But, no, I didn't check my watch at all. It was great. I loved it.
I saw one preview for it like 4 months ago, so
yeah.
I really didn't remember much about it outside of the concept, and my wife didn't know anything about it at all, except for we were sitting, basically I went to the bathroom before the movie started, and when I came back in, Larissa's like, I know what this is about now. I was like, what? How? She's like, I saw a commercial, and I guess there was a commercial before the movie that had Ted in it, and she was like, why did you bring me to this? It was totally, and I was like, man, that's why I didn't want you to know what it was about. But
well, did she like the movie?
She really enjoyed it too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
We thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I literally laughed so hard I had tears coming down my face. It just one of the best laughs I've had in quite some time. So
I mean, I want to dive into a few specifics, so you know, possible spoiler territory.
Yeah,
but. Dude, the fight. I mean, okay.
Well, they've shown the fight on the preview, so we're not giving too much away.
Oh, okay. And when it was essentially, like, the breaking point was him saying he wished he had a Teddy Ruxpin. But I knew that I was pretty much sold. When the narrator kind of went off on the little tangent, I was like, all right, that's pretty cool. And then when they're watching Flash Gordon, I was like, okay,
that's great. This is it.
And I told my son that I was like, okay, before you see Ted, if you ever do see Ted, you have to watch Flash Gordon first.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't appreciate Ted without seeing Flash
Gordon. You gotta have context.
Yes.
And that was the craziest thing, because there were, I can't say a lot of jokes, but there was a lot, well, there was some of the Flash Gordon material, especially when they hit the flashback as to what he thought his relationship was with Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
Swear to God, I was the only person in the theater laughing.
Oh,
and I was seeing it
was
with a bunch
up.
Of people, and I'm just going, am I the oldest person here? Am I the only one that remembers any of these jokes that gets the context of it? Apparently I was.
Dang. That sucks, because our theater was really into it. It was great.
Yeah, and it was like 1 o'clock.
Pretty full.
Yeah, it was 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. I'm just going, okay, this ought to be a pretty diverse crowd. But it's like, no, apparently I was either the only one with a sense of humor, or I was the only one there over 30. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was constantly laughing. I thought that the way that he handled the concept, I know it's not a perfect film.
No.
And you know, it kind of falters here and there.
Oh, yeah.
But all in all, I mean, I'll definitely own it. And I know I'll watch it a ton of times. Yeah. And I mean, me and my wife have already been quoting it since we walked out. I mean, look what Jesus did! Look what Jesus did! Look what Jesus did! I mean, dude, that was so funny.
It was.
And there were so many times that I was like, man, this is really brilliant. I mean, like, when the fact that, like, everyone knew about him, and he was, like, kind of a child celebrity.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just like Justin Bieber and, you know, that whole speech.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, no one gave a crap anymore. I mean, it was so funny. And the way that they kind of explained it, and I don't know. I thought it was pretty great.
Oh, man, yeah, it was.
And the good far outweighed the mediocre.
Yeah.
And it didn't have, the mediocre wasn't like what, like Mike Myers. You know, to where his mediocre is like just so bad, you're like, what? What?
Yeah.
It's almost you'll like get split his mediocre personalities and just kind of stuff.
It slows down the film almost. But this, you're just kind of going, oh, okay. And it almost, in a sense, gives you a chance to take a breath.
Yeah.
And then, okay, we're back into being funny, being entertaining. And
but I thought the relationship between Mark Wahlberg and Miley Kunis was really authentic. And you really kind of liked them both as a couple, and you could see why they liked each other. And it wasn't, Mark Wahlberg wasn't irritating.
Yeah.
And anytime a director can do that, that's special. And this was his first movie that he was directing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's saying something. Few directors have been able to do that.
True.
I mean, I wouldn't have thought 2 years ago, there's no way I would have thought that I would ever be a Mark Wahlberg fan. But after The Other Guys and Ted.
See,
I'd have to say that.
I don't know. I was not that big a fan of The Other Guys.
Oh my gosh, that's by
far. I saw it. It amused me. It was a work-related accident, but that's as far as it goes. I'm just like, yeah.
It's probably one of the comedies I've seen most.
Wow.
Especially within the last like 10 years.
Yeah.
I saw it like, I mean, it cracked me up. It was, dude, I can't, it really shocks me that you didn't like it. I thought it was such a perfect, like, kind of throwback, but kind of a mocking of 80s action. And
see, there were things about it I could appreciate.
I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was so funny. And their relationship, I thought, was hilarious.
Yeah.
I thought his whole Gator and the pimp alter ego was so funny.
That was funny. Yeah.
I thought everything, I mean, their whole, when they would go off and his, like, whole diatribe about being a tuna and they'll figure out a way to climb on land and make apparatuses so they can breathe and they'll climb up to the tiger and steal him and kill him in his sleep. I mean, it was so funny.
Yeah.
And then when Mark Wahlberg, like, just pushes his computer off the desk and he, like, Stan just freaks out on him. I don't know. I thought it was, it got better each time I watched it.
Well, maybe that's my problem. I haven't seen it enough.
Well, I think
that. I just saw it the one time, and I was like,
maybe we know what we're watching next time. Oh, yeah. Do you have anything else to say about Ted?
Nothing that's not going to just be total dickish and, you know, start just quoting quotes and, you know, naming scenes. And
yeah, yeah.
Spoiler alerts and all that. I was like, well, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and do that a couple episodes in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but definitely go see it. I'd say go see it quickly before people ruin it for you.
Yeah.
Because people are definitely going to be quoting it. I would definitely try to see it soon. I'm glad I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of like, I could be seeing Moonrise Kingdom. But I walked out of it. I was like, man, I really enjoyed Ted.
I did.
Yeah. And then after that, me and the wife saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Or Abe Lincoln. I don't know.
Abraham Lincoln, yeah.
Okay. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay.
I mean, he redeemed himself for Wanted, in my opinion.
Wow.
I thought it was really cool.
Okay.
And Larissa really liked it, and she did not want to see it at all.
Hmm.
And we walked out of that, and we were so pumped about seeing two really good movies that we thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, that's a rarity these days.
It is. It's the first time this summer, the first time since Avengers, I believe, that I can think of that I've walked out of the theater and been like, yeah, I'm glad I paid money for that. And I might do it again. Yeah. You know, I mean, if I had a buddy that was like, hey, let's go see Ted again, I'd be like, all right. And if he was like, hey, let's go see Abraham Lincoln. And I would highly recommend going to the theater and seeing that because the 3D, I thought, was so cool.
Really?
Because if you know, I mean, he's the director of Night Watch. His visual eye is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So with 3D, it just enhanced it. It was like having a 3D painting.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it was just, there was never, I mean, there might have been like one or two parts where intentional things were flying out.
Mm-hmm.
The 3D was almost all just kind of depth. And to bring, like, the composition to life. I mean, I thought it was just really cool.
Hmm.
And there's so many scenes. Like, there's this whole train scene that is so cool.
Yeah, I see that in the previews.
And then there's a whole horse stampede action scene that is so cool. And you would think that it would be cheesy in a lesser director's hand. Like, who's the dude that did Van Helsing? Steven Summers?
Yeah.
The guy that can almost do a good movie?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's almost close. In every movie, it's like, man, this is almost cool.
Yeah.
If this just had a few more IQ points. You know what I mean?
One thing I can say about Steven Summers, he does make a good summer drive-in movie.
Yeah.
Outside of that, know. You know. It's like, yeah, I mean, outside of that, that's about it. You know, it's one of those things, like, if you can't say something good, don't say anything at all. It's like, makes a good summer drive-in movie.
Yeah.
You notice I'm not talking.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I think all of his are near hits,
yeah.
But he still strikes out.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I would recommend going and seeing Abe Lincoln, and I would recommend the 3D. I mean, I thought it was really cool. Once again, it wasn't a perfect movie, you know, but considering it's a Russian guy telling an American story in a language that isn't his own,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it makes sense for the most part, and I'm smart enough to kind of put two and two together, you know, to connect the dots. I could see how people might come out and be like, oh, I'm kind of confused, because it covers his whole life.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, but I thought a lot of the stuff was neat, the twist that it did, and you've read the book, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book, yeah, if you get the chance to read the book, that book I thought was really good, so.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really neat. I would see it again.
Yeah. In fact, there's a couple things I'll probably discuss with you afterwards. But yeah, it's... Because there were just moments in the book where I'm just... I was reading it, and admittedly, I don't know a whole lot about Abe Lincoln in the younger formative years. But, you know, when they start talking about... That's when he discovered the vampires and everything. I was going, okay. But then, as he starts getting into... being a lawyer and then later into politics and he's still, you know, fighting vampires. I'm just going, I'm getting more into this, but yeah, the whole thing later during the war and everything, I'm just going, now that's clever. Cause there are a few clever twists to the whole thing. You're just going, haha, you got me. I'm hooked now.
Yeah. So. I thought, and once again, my wife really enjoyed it as well. So
cool.
Yeah, and for a genre movie like that, I mean, it's kind of given that I'm going to like it, so
yeah.
It's perfectly understandable if people dismiss my opinion to a certain degree, but my wife doesn't have a lot of tolerance for it, so if she kind of gets won over when she is really not as much hope for it, to me that says something. So,
yeah.
Have you seen anything else in the theater recently?
Actually, yes. I saw Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which is really pretty good.
Really?
Yeah. It kind of surprised me. Because I figured, okay, you know, especially with a title like this, and then you get the whole concept of this meteor heading towards Earth, it's going to take us out. There's nothing we can do about it. We just have to pretty much accept our fate. And the whole movie takes place over the last 3 weeks of life here on Earth. I thought there was some really clever material that was presented, you know, as far as how people would actually respond to, hey, I got 3 weeks to live, you know, here we go. You know, they've kind of accepted it and they're just going with it. It's like everybody's just kind of living out their bucket list. you know,
so it was just kind of a character study.
Yeah, really.
But to me, it looks like it's the same freaking character Steve Carell's played in every freaking movie he's been in, and it's really is that not the case?
Surprisingly, no. Because
that's actually what I've heard from several people too.
Steve Carell will usually annoy the living piss out of me, but he didn't in this movie.
Your piss is alive?
Oh, yes.
That's weird.
Yes, and it gets annoyed.
Man.
And when it gets annoyed, look out.
Okay, I think you're going to need to start bringing your own chair. I mean, no offense or anything, but we're going to have to modify some things. We'll work that out later anyway. So.
But.
So you liked it.
I did. I really enjoyed it. And I appreciate the fact that they don't...
So really, by you liking it, that pretty much tells me that everyone dies at the end. Or that it follows through and the world does end. And that, because you told me, you already, I believe on a previous one, you said that that's the only way that you would like the movie.
I'm just going, okay, you know, it's like as long as they don't wuss out on the ending and just be like, oh... Well, it turns out the meteor will just miss us.
There seems to be an astronaut team on this meteor, and they're planting dynamite in the middle of it.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be sweet if they did, like, a crossover with Armageddon.
Yeah.
And it's like an M. Night twist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that the whole movie's actually been back in, like, what, 92, when Armageddon came out? And Bruce Willis the whole time has been on there, but you've actually been following this... you know, these two characters, but and then like I'm assuming with people like acting like that that like if that did happen and Bruce Willis did save the day, they'd be like, oh shit, my life sucks now.
Pretty much,
you know, I mean, it's like that'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, it could be.
We ought to do, like, I bet Magazine or Cracked, are they still around? If they're doing that sounds like something that they do. Anyway, you're welcome for the plug.
Hey.
People. But I haven't heard from Netflix.
Yeah, still waiting. Yeah.
Daggum. Daggum!
Yeah, I saw that. And then I also saw God Bless America.
Oh, wasn't that great?
It was.
It was great.
I love that. That is one of the best written movies I've seen in such a long time.
It's basically a movie written by Bobcat Goldthwait.
I know.
He wrote and directed it.
Yeah.
And it's about this guy that finds out that he has terminal brain cancer. Or a tumor, or something like that. Yeah, he basically...
Terminal brain tumor.
Yeah. So, and he's just sick of, like, how desensitized everyone's gotten, and self-involved, and selfish, and obsessed with their phones, and just, you know, and he decides to ultimately hunt down, like, a celebrity on this reality TV show, this girl who's just a spoiled bitch. And... he tracks her down and kills her, essentially, and then this high school chick, and then it becomes kind of like a... What's that movie? The Killer? No. The one by... with Natalie Portman.
Oh, The Professional.
Yeah, The Professional.
Yeah.
Then it becomes like that with this high school girl going around with him, and they basically just start taking out anyone that they deem as kind of... But it has such great social satire. Yeah. So, you saw that in the theater?
I'm not sure how legal it was, but yeah, I'd seen it before on home video, and then I noticed it was playing theatrically, and so I was just like, yeah, I am kind of bored, why not, I'll go see this movie, and so yeah, I checked it out, and it was...
Anyone else in the theater?
You know, surprisingly enough, and that's why I was kind of wondering in Ted, it's like, just, am I the only one with a sense of humor, because I had probably 5 or 6 other people in the theater with me, and half the time, yeah, I was the only one laughing. I'm just like, it's a comedy, folks. Laugh, it's okay. You know, I don't know, but
it's pretty dark.
Oh, it is. But
I mean, what the opening scene is him shooting a baby, like kicking in the door of the neighbor's apartment because the baby's crying and the baby's fighting, and he shotguns all of them and he kills the baby too, you know what I mean? So it's not like he makes any qualms about what movie you're getting ready to watch. It's kind of like that whole Death Race experience I had with the old lady sitting next to us who started crying, sobbing uncontrollably after the first death occurred, and then her husband would not let her leave the theater.
Oh, jeez.
So it was like essentially watching Death Race with my grandma who's being emotionally scarred watching this horrible violence that I want to laugh at because it's so over the top.
Is this Death Race or Death Race 2000?
Death Race, the remake.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Not a movie I would have taken Grandma to see, but... You...
I was shocked at how many blue-haired beauties were in that theater. Me and Larissa were sitting there, and it just started filling up with, like, it was almost like a bus let out from, like, a home or something. It was weird. And I was like, it says Death Race right on the ticket. It's rated R for, like, grisly violence and nonstop language. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah.
Yeah, and when the car turns, when it's basically when the dude says, "You can't kill me!"
Yeah.
And then the car's like, splat, and he explodes. She was like, "Bah!" And with her hands cupped in her face.
Oh, my God.
Just sobbing, and my wife is two seats away. And she, like, keeps looking at me like, there's something I need to do about this. And I want to laugh.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just one of those people. I have that sense of humor. That's exactly. My sense of humor. I mean, well, it's just a Bill Quincy moment when a sudden burst of explosive violence happens on the screen. Most of the times, I'm the guy cracking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm that a-hole. So when I saw Final Destination, it was so crowded that we had to sit three and three, like three up front and then three behind us in the row behind us. And my mom and dad and brother were behind us. And then my other brother and then me and my wife were in front of us, I think. I forget the exact, but I know my mom and dad were there because it ties into the story. But when the girl's like, "Oh, we're fine," and then steps out and the bus hits
her,
I laughed. I could not stop laughing. And I was like laughing literally like a good solid 3 minutes. And that's a long time. It doesn't sound like a long time. That's a long time when you're laughing.
Oh, it is.
Into the next scene, I heard my mom behind me say, "Quinn, you're sick." So.
Well, to be fair, though, that was kind of a funny scene. I mean,
it was. And it was meant to be.
It was played for laughs, exactly.
And it kind of created its own subgenre of movies that became its sequel.
Yeah.
Then other people follow suit, like Saw.
Yeah. Although, I do have to admit, and again, I saw the first movie. I really enjoyed it. I stopped. You know, having gone down that road with the Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street, the Texas Chainsaw Massacres, I'm just going, no, I'm tired of, you know, getting two or three movies in and then just feeling that I'm just, you know, because you walk out of that last movie, you're just going, I hated that movie. And I hated every other movie that came before it. It's like, I am sick of this franchise now.
So you don't ever get in the mood to just watch all the Friday the 13th?
No.
Oh.
I'll get in the mood to watch the first one, and sometimes I'll
get in the mood. Yeah, I mean, that one's okay.
Yeah, sometimes I'll get in the mood to watch the second one.
I think part two and three are better.
Sometimes I'll get in the mood to watch the second one, but then I can never find it, so the mood just goes away.
I think three is fun, too. I like it a lot.
I did see three not so long ago. Again, a work-related accident, but it had been so long since I'd seen it, I had forgotten a lot of it, so it was almost like watching it again for the first time. It was kind of fun.
It's the one where he gets his hockey mask.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was all the
iconic. I love, too, because he has a pillowcase, and I thought that was way more effective.
I thought
effective.
The pillowcase was so much more effective,
it's
especially
so creepy.
Because it only had the one hole.
Exactly. It's
that
so
was awesome.
Creepy. Yeah, it was. I agree completely. And even as a kid, that's what I thought, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just him running around in like a denim shirt, a plaid shirt, and he had the pillowcase with one hole. You're going, uh-oh.
Yeah. It's like, you don't even need peripheral, that's how
fast
he is.
It's like, oh man, you know, that just lets the imagination run wild when it's like, you know, you've got this pillowcase, and you're trying to picture what does the killer look like, but then, it's like to have this one hole, and it wasn't even like in a normal place, it's kind of off-center, you're just going...
Yeah.
What the hell kind of mongoloid child is this?
Yep. All right, well, let's move on to the next one, which is Just Watched.
Just Watched. Yes.
Watched a documentary called Heckler, directed by Michael Addis. Came out in 2007.
Well, okay.
It's basically Jamie Kennedy, who's best known for probably his role in Scream as the dude who knows the horror rules and kind of lays them out at the party. But he was also known pretty well for the Jamie Kennedy Experiment, which was a TV show that ran like 2.5 seasons on, I forget what channel, but
I think it was either Fox or
it could have been. It definitely had that vibe. Yeah. It was cool. I mean, it had some interesting social things to say.
Mm-hmm. I'll admit I never watched it all that often. In fact, I don't know that I've ever seen a complete episode.
So what'd you think of the documentary? Oh, well, basically, we didn't even say what it's about. It basically deals with hecklers, and it kind of follows him on doing stand-up and being heckled, but it also goes into some other areas that
Well, he talks to other comedians and their impressions on being heckled. And
it's pretty impressive, the roster of people he gets to speak.
I gotta admit, I was impressed.
About this subject.
Yeah.
It's pretty of a vast variety of people, and yeah, they basically, you know, deals with hecklers with comedians, but also like politicians and sports figures, people being interviewed on the news, and that kind of dived into the psychosis of it, and I don't know, I found it very interesting. I thought it raised a lot of, it's really easy, especially as people that, you know, have opinions and like to voice them, especially about movies. And it's easy for us to forget the aspect that, you know, real people have spent 3-5 years working on this.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been a labor of love, and even if it's not quite perfect, you know, it's still... And it's so easy for us to nitpick the imperfections away. And to me, that's what I found very... It was kind of a good wake-up call. And I was kind of like, well, you know, maybe I should parse my words more carefully. Because it's easy to be flippant.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that was one of the more interesting aspects of the documentary, because Jamie Kennedy would actually sit in the room and read reviews with the people that wrote the reviews, and they're like horrible, mean-spirited reviews. And these people had this air of pompousness that they couldn't even, like, admit that only one guy, and he would, like, offer an excuse that was so pathetic of what a... Well, actually, I had a fever of 104 degrees when I wrote that. It's like, well, then you read it after you don't have a fever, and you cut that out and read it.
Uh-huh.
You know, use that as an excuse. Like, I just had to send it, but I was so sick, I don't even remember. I thought one of the very poignant sections was his interview with Carrot Top.
Yeah.
And that was very uncomfortable. He basically sits and reads, like, really horrible reviews of Chairman of the Board to Carrot Top, but he also talks to Carrot Top about how Carrot Top is kind of a butt of a bunch of jokes for everyone, and asks him, you know, why he thinks that is, and he really doesn't, and he seems like a nice guy. I remember as a kid seeing Carrot Top, and I used to like him as a kid. I thought he was had a neat little shtick. I'm surprised that he's still doing it.
Yeah, I gotta admit.
But he's always seemed like a nice guy.
As, because I remember seeing him on, like, Young Comedian specials. And admittedly, yeah, he used to kind of annoy me. But then I've seen some of his stuff in later years. And I don't know, maybe just, you know, between the two of us, you know, growing up, growing older and maturing a little bit, we seem to have kind of met somewhere in the middle. And it's like half the stuff that used to annoy me about him doesn't anymore. You know, I mean, he's really kind of changed his act somewhat. His jokes have gotten a little funnier. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a big fan, but if I had a chance to go see one of his shows, yeah, I would probably take it and just go, all right,
I would.
Let's just see, you know, what this guy's done. Because like I said, all I've seen have just been pieces here and there, and I'm just like, wow, that wasn't as annoying as it used to be. Okay. Almost funny.
Yeah.
So,
because I mean, even like someone like me that enjoys really bad movies, you know, because to a certain extent I'm doing that with bad movies, because the worst movies are ones that were made with love and every intention, and they truly believe that they're good. I mean, Troll 2, the director truly believes it is good. I'm assuming you've seen Best Worst Movie.
Unfortunately, no, I have not.
That's on Netflix. We got to watch that next time.
All right, let's watch it.
All right, well.
We know what we're doing next time.
That's right. Let's go to recently viewed.
Okay.
You seen anything lately on, like, DVD? On the TV you don't have?
DVD.
Catch anything on the side of a barn?
DVDs I don't own and TVs I don't have. Actually, you know, it's funny. I was kind of looking through and I was thinking about my favorite year with Mark Lynn Baker and Peter O'Toole. I hadn't really thought about that movie in a while, and I'm just going, man, I still like that movie. You know, I enjoy the shit out of it. I can sit down and watch it pretty much any time. I remember seeing this theatrically back in 1980, whatever. And
what's it about?
Well, it's set back in the 50s, and it's Mark Lynn Baker plays this guy who's kind of this up and coming writer on what is essentially like Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows, but you know, it's got Joe Bologna plays this guy. I forget his name will come to me at one of the most inopportune moments. But it's this weekly live show that, you know, of course, is
like a variety show or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you know, it runs coast to coast and everybody loves it. You know, it's essentially based off of Your Show of Shows, the Sid Caesar thing. And this week's guest is Alan Swan, the movie star, played by Peter O'Toole. Played brilliantly by Peter O'Toole. This guy, I mean, he's Peter O'Toole at 11. You know,
what was the movie directed? Who directed it?
You would ask me that. I'm not sure, but you might take a.
All right. Well, gander there, so he comes on the TV show, and
it's, you know, yeah. Basically, he's the guest that week, and you know, he's always had this reputation for being, yeah, that's right, Richard Benjamin. You know, he's always had this reputation for just being this drunken womanizer. He's, you know, just always kind of a handful. So they put Mark Lynn Baker in charge of him just because they're like, okay, you know, it's like, you're his biggest fan, you're his biggest supporter. Well, guess what? And it's going to be your job to make sure that this guy shows up to rehearsals, to the show, on time, every time, or it's your job. He's just like having to basically hang out with the guy. And just kind of like, no, we shouldn't do that. No, okay. You know, so he ends up, of course, getting dragged through, you know.
So it's kind of like Tommy Boy?
Honestly, I never saw Tommy Boy.
Black Sheep? Any Chris Farley, David Spade comedy?
Not my cup. I don't like those guys.
Well, how do you know? If you love My Favorite Year, it sounds like the same plot that's in all those.
Well,
every comedy that they've ever done.
That's
together.
Great, but they annoy me. Peter O'Toole does not.
Well, fair enough. I guess that's an important factor when spending an hour and a half with someone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, have you ever known someone that kind of irritates you the first, and then you kind of warm up to them and they become like a really close friend?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. How Tommy Boy would be. Maybe like the first 15-20 minutes you're like, man, when do I get a leave? By the end you're like, you know what, I'd hug those guys. I don't know, buddy.
Yeah.
I saw Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
I'm sorry.
Dude, okay, I saw it in the theater and I liked it. Watching it this time, when I saw it in the theater, I was looking for, like, a Ghost Rider made by the guys that did Crank 2, so I was looking for insanity, and for it to be insane, and it was, and it is. It has one of the worst screenplays that I can think of recently, and the acting, it's like they're, like, way more concerned with everything else besides the acting, and just kind of, like, let them do their own thing.
Yeah.
Because it's all over the place.
Show up, phone it in.
It's pretty horrible. You know,
they're basically just reading lines because there's no storyline to this.
No.
Line, you know,
it's like, and things happen and it's just ridiculous. But I gotta say, the cinematography is incredible. I mean, I think it's fantastic. And you watch it and it's just, I think that the Ghost Rider looks cool. His motorcycle looks cool. I think it looks awesome when he would like take over the other vehicles and things, and like the truck and the big claw thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it just looked really cool, and it had an amazing energy, which is not surprising coming from the guys of Crank. But, yeah, I mean, anyone that's like, man, that's a piece of crap, I'd be like, you're right, it is. But you know what? I'd probably watch it anytime I caught on TV, just because of the visuals. Because I'm a very visual person, you know, so.
I can appreciate visuals, too, but man, that movie sucked.
Nah, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, it was.
I mean, yeah, it is. It's bad, but I mean, Alex, you got to realize I have a level of being able to tolerate badness. It's like one of my powers. It's one of my superpowers. It's bad.
You do have a very zen-like quality when it comes to bad movies. I don't understand it at all.
I love it. It's like getting a warm hug from my childhood. Watching a bad movie. It is. It's. I mean, did you remember? We first met working at Oak Park Mall Theaters.
Yep.
And how old were you? I was like, I think 18.
Oh, crap. I would have been...
Like 21?
Yeah, I was about... I would have been about 22, 23, somewhere around there.
Oh, I also watched a movie called The Invention of Dr. Nakamats. Ever heard of it?
Can't say that I have.
It's a documentary directed by Casper Astrup Schroeder. Not Schroeder. My bad.
We'll just edit that.
Sorry, Casper. basically, it's this Japanese guy, and he's got 3,357 patents currently in Japanese.
Wow.
And are in the Japanese patent office. And
it's almost as many as KISS.
Some of the things that he's an inventor and a scientist, and well, some of the things he's made is he invented the floppy disk.
Really?
Yeah, he invented like this soy sauce transporter pump thing for his mom because his mom was getting arthritis and couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So he wanted to help her out in the kitchen and made like this pump thing. That was like one of his first. He won the IG Nobel Prize for photographing and analyzing, like through blood sample, every meal he ever took for 34 years.
Wow.
And it kind of shows he has like this contraption he made that's like, it's basically a sweatband and it's attached, it looks like a garage door opener. And he presses the button and it takes his blood sample, and I don't know, it's a very fascinating. He's also very kind of strange. I mean,
yeah,
he's kind of a genius, so he's kind of out there, and like he thinks that he built this thing that captured his mom. So when she died at 102, she's not actually dead. She's alive in this, like, weird cup thing that's kind of up in his house, up on these, like, girder things. Dude, it's... But the documentary is only 57 minutes. It's available on Netflix, and
you
could do a lot worse. You know, spend an hour with it. It was entertaining. So, we have a new segment that we want to introduce called The Test of Time.
Yep.
And basically what we're going to do is revisit a movie that we used to like a lot as a kid or younger, and now that we're a little aged like a fine wine, we will examine it and kind of revisit it and just see how it holds up. And anyway, what I watched was the 1986 classic directed by Steve Miner, House. Were you a fan of the movie back in the day?
Oh, yeah. I still am. I just haven't had a chance to watch it lately. But
yeah,
how does it hold up on the test of time?
Surprisingly well.
Good.
The practical effects were... It was nice,
yeah,
but they're also pretty bad. Mm. So I think that the nostalgia factor helped a lot.
Yeah.
But as far as the story... It was cool. It was enjoyable, but yeah, the special effects there. I mean, when I was a kid and I saw it,
yeah,
I thought Big Ben was like one of the coolest monsters. It was like a living Eddie from Iron Maiden covers, yeah, you know. And watching it now, it was like, wow, it's not really good at all. Yeah. So
the one thing I do remember about House, it was the first movie to really make me think and consider the disembodied hand. Where in the hell does the disembodied hand get momentum? Because when he's sitting there having a fight with it, you know, it's like I can see it moving on its own because it has fingers, you know, so you're just like, all right, that's all well and good.
Yeah, being able to fly across the room.
But when he can fly across the room, grab his neck, you know, basically throw him around the room, I'm just going, where is it getting this momentum from?
You know? Yeah, and you know, there's definitely, it's 80s, you know, you can tell it came out in 1986.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, basically we should tell people what it is. It's basically the great American hero, William Catt,
yep.
plays a author who writes kind of horror novels. He's kind of known to write horror novels, and his latest novel is going to be about his experiences in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
But he's kind of got a writer's block.
Writer's block, yeah.
He's having trouble coming up with, or just putting it down, and I think it's because the memories are so painful, yeah. you know, because it's Vietnam. But he moves into his aunt's house that his aunt dies kind of mysteriously within the house. She hangs herself.
Okay.
And he decides to move in there. She leaves him the house, and it's basically haunted. And watching it as an adult, I found myself, like, finding where it kind of aped from different movies. Like, it kind of had, it kind of stole from Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, a, like, when he actually transports over into Vietnam, like, he opens up the window in the bathroom and he looks down, it's just, like, this blackness. And it's, like, the whole other side thing, and only a specific time can things come out. You know, and then it has definitely has like an Evil Dead vibe because the creatures look like the creatures and the whole disembowelment and how they're still alive. And I enjoyed it. That is a fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
It still is. I would recommend it.
Okay.
But also, if I heard it was being remade, it wouldn't piss me off.
We differ there, but you know, we always do.
Yeah. It don't bother me. Just like, I mean, I don't know. It's like with movies that have been made from novels. Especially novels I've read. It's like, sometimes they can do a pretty good job, and I appreciate a lot of aspects, and I understand that making a movie is a different animal,
yeah.
and that you can't capture, like, the subtleties of character that you can with this book. Like, The Shining. I still think that there's a better version that can be made from that book. Because the things in the book, when you read it, are creepy. He didn't include in the movie. The movie... Kubrick's movie is creepy, and it's a classic, and it's well-deserved to be a classic.
Yeah.
And I love the movie. But it's not really the book. It kind of takes the same basic premise of the book, but it kind of twists it as well, and he made it his own.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, it doesn't even touch on, like, the animals that come alive, the whole, not the animal, the hedge animals.
Okay.
You know, and they come alive, and how he sees them, like, moving, and you know, and just that kind of subtle build-up, and how things are just kind of off, and I don't know, I like that kind of horror, yeah. that slow kind of, is he crazy, or is it really happening, or...
So if they did an actual literal translation of the book, there's a whole other story out there.
It could be done.
Yeah.
They could do, so, I've like, if I heard they were doing The Shining, yeah. I wouldn't be like, oh, they're remaking The Shining.
Yeah.
I'd be like, okay, well, they might do it and do a version, because they did it for TV, but it sucked. And they had, like, cheap CGI, and they had Steven Weber as Jack Torrance. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, this abusive... He was a mean drunk. Daddy's a mean drunk. But he sure is pretty. No, I mean, no, I'm sorry. I
forgot they did that, because, yeah, it was... Oddly enough, just this morning I was having a conversation with somebody about how they'll probably go back through and start remaking all the Stephen King classic, you know, movies... Because they're remaking Carrie. They've already remade
Why?
The show. I don't know. See? Exactly.
Well, they just came out with a Carrie remake on TV like 2 years ago.
Did they?
Yeah.
I know they had the Carrie 2, the sequel, but... Yeah, apparently they've got a remake, Carrie. They've remade The Shining.
But that's the thing. Are they really remakes? Are they just...
Retellings?
Another...
Yeah.
Take at the book.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'd like to see someone actually adapt Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
Dude, when I heard they were making Lawnmower Man, that's a perfect example. When I heard they were making Lawnmower Man, that's the first short story I've read by Stephen King
mm-hmm.
that I was like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? This yeah. is some effed up stuff. And for people that don't know, in Lawnmower Man, the short story, basically this dude... is being nagged by his wife to mow the lawn, and it's really long, and he doesn't want to, and he's just a lazy piece of crap, and he just wants to sit on his back porch, like in a hammock.
Yeah.
So he basically hires this dude to come and mow his lawn. And the dude shows up, and everything's cool, and he lays in his hammock and goes to sleep and wakes up, and the dude is, like, buck naked, down on all fours, eating the grass, like... walking across, yeah, mowing, and the way he describes it, it's so disturbing. The dude has like this huge mouth, and this green is just dripping out of his mouth, and the juices are pouring out, and he's just mowing down the grass.
Yeah.
And it's so disturbing. And I heard they were making it into a movie, and I'm like, what? There is no way they're making it into a movie.
Yeah,
and then I saw the preview, computers, and I'm like, what? This is like Flowers for Algernon. This isn't Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, there's no computers in this movie. What?
Like, take a mentally handicapped person and make them smart by giving them a virtual identity. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, why are you calling this Lawnmower Man again?
Yeah.
You're just going to make people mad, like me.
The question put to me this morning was basically, how long do you think, you know, or do you think in about 10 or 12 years they'll remake Shawshank Redemption?
No.
And I'm like, it really wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think that they'll do it any better.
It's held up surprisingly well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really, it doesn't look aged much.
No.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see any filmmaker being able to, looking at it and being like, I think I could do that better.
No.
You know, I don't know. I would probably say I don't think anyone's going
to. I doubt that anybody would. If they did,
I think Green Mile has a better chance of getting a remade before Shawshank.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone just kind of, I think that would just be a universal, like, I think that would piss off my parents. And that's having to say, you know, that's saying something.
It takes a lot to piss them off.
It would do, like, several generations of people that were like, what? You know, because most remakes, you know, people younger than us are like, okay, who cares? Why is my dad mad?
Yeah.
My dad wouldn't see this movie, but who cares? It looks so awesome to me. CGI
I've never heard of this movie before. It's like,
yeah.
But, you know. The only way I see him really redoing Shawshank Redemption would be if they did an anthology piece for different seasons. And they, well, hell, they'd have to go back and remake all four movies. Well, no, they never did make a movie out of the last story. I forget the name of the story, but basically you've got Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, I think it was Apt Pupil came out of that, and then there was another one.
So there's one story of different
seasons.
There's
actually one story.
And you think that it's worthy to be turned into a movie? Or
Like I said, I think if somebody, I'm not saying necessarily turn it into a story or turn it into a movie, but I think if somebody were to actually do that and then just adapt the other three short stories and actually call the thing Different Seasons, then yeah, I think that would probably be the only way that they would ever remake The Shawshank Redemption. But like I said, you'd also have to go back through and remake all three, you know, the other two stories as well, which, you know, while hardly anybody remembers Apt Pupil,
for good reason.
Yeah. You know, somebody's going to go, man, you can't remake Stand By Me. So, you know, again, it all comes down to who's.
Well, that one also is held up surprisingly well.
Oh, yeah.
So, I can understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since we brought up Stephen King, we should rightfully bring up a good author. Do you like Clive Barker?
I do.
Were you a Nightbreed fan?
As far as the movie? I didn't hate it. I know a lot of people did.
Have you read?
I have not read Cabal, so I had the advantage. But, you know, dude, I thought the movie for what it was.
If you saw the movie, you've read Cabal. I mean, it was almost, with a couple of things, like with the exception of, like when the girlfriend goes and saves Boone and gets him out of jail, there's...
Okay.
Basically the sex scene in the book, and they like turn into animals, and or he turns into an animal while they're, but Clive Barker always has weird things like that.
It almost sounds like cat people.
And they made him change it. The studio made him cut it and reshoot that. But okay, I bring up Nightbreed strictly for two reasons. Number one, I heard that they're turning the book into, or no, not the book, they're going to like make a sequel, but the sequel is going to be like a miniseries. And then
I heard something about a miniseries, but I didn't realize it was supposed to be a sequel.
It has to be, because I'm telling you, the novella is like the screenplay for the movie. There's nothing, except for like a few things, but as far as like plot, with the exception of a few things, it's identical. It's like the screenplay, there's not much. It ends right where the movie ends. Huh. And it's so primed to go. And the comics go from where the movie ends. That's where the number one in the comics was. And I have like the first 45, 30 something. I have almost all of the comics.
Wow.
And they're really cool because they follow the story.
Okay.
And, but anyway, I guess there's like a, it's called Nightbreed, the Cabal Edition. And it's the director's cut. Okay. And it's like 2 hours long. And I guess they had a petition to get the studio to release the negative in the first place from like the archives. And then they like have this negative and they take it around and they do midnight showings. So, cool if it came around here.
Well, I thought it was just available on home video.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's like a total kind of, not underground because it's legit, but...
Yeah. Huh.
I think the only way to see it is this negative. And I think that, well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I that was the impression I got.
Okay.
I guess I could dive into the research a little bit better.
Yeah.
Get back with you.
But yeah, I could have sworn... Now, maybe there's two different versions out there, but I know that I've seen a quote-unquote special edition of Nightbreed, you know, at my local Best Buy, but that doesn't necessarily make it this two-hour version that you're talking about. So
yeah. And you also saw the Woody Allen one.
True, I did. Wow, I'm glad you reminded me because yeah, that's kind of how where that.
But you know what? I rest my case. So we can just move right on. Because anyone that's followed these so far knows how thrilled I am that that even exists.
Yeah, To Rome with Love. If you've seen the preview, you know, and you're sitting there thinking, wow, this movie looks like it's just kind of wandering around. That's because, yeah, that movie's just kind of wandering around. It's this...
Well, he's old. I mean, what is he, like 78 or something?
Something, yeah.
It's like, crazy how old he is and people still let him operate heavy machinery. I mean, his bones don't heal the way they used to. He can hurt himself. He can fall down on set. I bet his insurance is insane. Do you think they wheelchair him around?
Who knows?
I bet they do. I don't know. I wonder if people have to sign contracts. Like, if this was an interview and a movie star was here, they'd be like, cut it out! You're gonna end up on his list. It's gonna take you out. You don't want on Woody Allen's list.
No.
Oh my gosh!
Don't
hang okay.
The Woodman.
Okay. Yeah. Let's end it. Then.
Yeah.
You can ask me the Abraham Lincoln things, and I want to mention that one part of the fight that I thought I was gonna pee my pants.
Yeah. For those of us who have seen.
So anyway, go see Ted.
Yeah. Go see Ted.
Go see Abraham Lincoln in 3D.
Go see Seeking Your Friend for the End of the World. Go see God Bless America.
Wow.
Three
movies at once in the theater we're seeing.
I know.
And I'm holding out hope for Moonrise Kingdom. I know you're not. But I've heard that it's good.
I'll probably give it a chance. I'm just really not a big Wes Anderson fan, so...
I'm a huge Bottle Rocket Rushmore fan.
See, I loved Bottle Rocket. I thought that movie was just great. I still do. I love Bottle Rocket.
It is.
I loved the Royal Tenenbaums. And I know I'm in the minority on this, but yeah, I really liked...
Life Aquatic?
Life Aquatic.
Oh, I did too.
Okay.
It was great.
Yeah.
Is that your dog? Whack! I mean, that's like a perfect scene.
I know.
That scene, that needs to go into like the archives of brilliant film history.
But, you know, everything else is just kind of like, meh, you know. I can't really say that I hate any one particular Wes Anderson film. Well, no, I can, because I really didn't like The Adventures of Mr. Fox or whatever that stupid movie was called.
Oh, curse you. Cuss. Cuss you, Alex. Yeah, I wasn't a fan either. I remember, okay, my kids came home from spending the night with my brother.
Yeah.
And they were, like, mortified, like, offended that my brother made them watch Mr. Fox. They thought it was the most ridiculous movie they had seen.
Oh, my God.
That might have been, like, the catalyst where they're like, okay, I'm done with kid movies.
Yeah.
Like, that is just stupid. And, I don't think they knew what to...
It was just too long.
It would have been a great 40-minute movie.
Oh, yeah.
So, anything coming out that you're looking forward to?
well, from here on out, we only got the Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, no, we don't. We have Spider-Man. Spider-Man! Yeah, buddy. It's going to be great. You're going to be eating your words. And are you going to see it? I need a commitment
I'll probably have to just for this damn thing.
Because I'm going to see it and talk about it. I have a perfect plan for what you need to do, Alex, to make it worth your time and money. But I'm not going to commit that in this recording. Okay. So we have a lot of things to get to as soon as we hit stop on here. So have a good night. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
This has been a Phase Media Podcast. Find us online at justaphase.com. That's Phase with a mother effin' F. Phase.